Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. So nice to have you with us. Hope you all had a wonderful holiday, great holiday weekend, and we're now in the month of December, December 1st on the West Coast, or it's good morning on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. December the 2nd, 2008. Lots of news happening. Today was the day that the Supreme Court was to hear the argument and discuss the lawsuit that attorney Philip Berg filed to force not yet President-elect Barack Obama to produce his certificate of live birth and some other documents. There are lawsuits actually happening all over the place. Alan Keyes has filed a suit in the state of California demanding pretty much the same thing. Bob Schultz from We the People has published a very specific document in the Chicago Tribune. And he was on a radio show, I understand, today. I didn't get to hear that interview, but the so-called guest of this AM station in the Chicago area said it was the biggest mistake that he had made bringing on, I'm going to paraphrase the words they usually call us, kooks or wackos or nuts or something like that. But basically he denigrated Mr. Schultz, who has been a patriot and on many fronts, fighting the election corruption. He was a staunch supporter of Ron Paul when Ron Paul was running, and he was very outspoken about what was going on that front. And so he's well respected in the patriot community. It's a shame that the mainstream media continues these attacks against anyone who's out there trying to bring us the truth. Now, more news. There's an attorney in Willacy County, Texas, by the name of Juan Guerra, who he's a district attorney who has indicted two well-known individuals, one being former Attorney General Roberto Gus. And the other one has been called from time to time the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney. And I find this rather interesting. I'm going to share this news with you, and you can take it for what it's worth. This comes from News Channel 5, KRGV, in Willacy County, Texas. Guerra reveals evidence, and this was actually posted on their website November 26th. District Attorney Juan Guerra says his investigation took him all the way to the top, to the Vice President of the United States. He showed News Channel 5 records that he says could be used to prove Dick Cheney is guilty of criminal activity. The charges against the vice president stem from the Willacy State Jail in Raymondville and from the inmate Gregorio De La Rosa, Jr., who was killed there by a fellow inmate in 2001. Guerra says that the elected officials let the jail get away with murder so they can keep making money. Greed will get you discovered and arrested every time, and that's what happened to Cheney, Garrett said. Garrett says he went through Cheney's financial records and the prison company's financial records and found the connection. The three top prison companies Guerra researched were Corrections Corporation of America, GEO Group, and Cornell. Those three have the Vanguard Group in common, which is an investment company that puts money into all three prison companies. We knew Vanguard was the key, said Guerra. Guerra showed us the vice president's financial disclosure from last year, and it shows he owned shares in the Vanguard Group. Guerra estimates Cheney has $85 million invested in Vanguard and, in turn, into the prison companies. The problem you have is he now has a direct interest, said Guerra, and according to Guerra, it's a direct interest in making sure the prison companies stay in business. In Cheney's indictment, Guerra wrote that no government officials made efforts to properly investigate the death of Gregorio De La Rosa Jr. He says that was due to the money being made by government officials. Guerra claims Cheney put a stop to the De La Rosa investigation in 2006. He claims that Cheney is simply looking the other way while inmates across the country are dying in private prisons, which is why Cheney is charged with engaging in organized criminal activity. Where have we heard that before? Now, that is significant when we look at who guards these prisons. And I understand that Wackenhut is, again, the prison guard service. They hire the guards. I guess they do the training, and they do the cover-ups. By the way, Wackenhut is originally an Israeli company, if it's still not an Israeli company. They have security contracts with nuclear facilities around the country, as well as many of the entrances and quite possibly right on the premises of many of the secret underground bases, the deep underground, or what they call the dumb bases, and that's a great name for them. Area 51, for example, or the Dulce base, 29 Palms. When people get close to the access roads or anywhere in the vicinity of any of those bases, they're usually followed by SUVs and threatened. Sometimes arrested. Sometimes these people are never seen again, or they are stalked and harassed over a period of time. So this is just scratching the surface. But praise God for District Attorney Juan Guerra. The man has got some courage. Now I'd like to share something that a good friend of mine sent in an email, and this is sort of a quiz. I'd like you to listen to this and see if you can figure out who this is about. This piece of literature was sent to me. I don't know who to credit as the author, but it's called Who Am I? I was raised in one country, but my father was born in another. I was not his only child. He fathered several children with a number of women. I became very close to my mother because my father showed little interest in me. Then my mother died at an early age from cancer. Later in life, questions arose over my real name. My birth records were sketchy, and no one was able to produce a reliable birth certificate. I grew up practicing one faith, but converted to Christianity because this was widely accepted in my country. But I practiced non-traditional beliefs and did not follow mainstream Christianity. I worked and lived among lower-class people as a young adult before I decided it was time to get serious about my life, and I embarked on a new career. I wrote a book about my struggles growing up. It was clear to those who read my memoirs that I had difficulties accepting that my father abandoned me as a child. I became active in local politics when I was in my 30s and then burst onto the scene as a candidate for national office when I was in my 40s. I had a virtually non-existent resume, very little work history, and no experience in leading a single organization. Yet, I was a powerful speaker who managed to draw incredibly large crowds during my public appearances. At first, my political campaign focused on my country's foreign policy. I was critical of my country in the last war, but what launched my rise to national prominence were views on the country's economy. I had a plan on how we could do better. I knew which group was responsible for getting us into this mess. Mine was a people's campaign. I was the surprise candidate because I emerged from outside the traditional path of politics and was able to gain widespread popular support. I offered the people the hope that together we could change our country and the world. I spoke on behalf of the downtrodden, including persecuted minorities such as Jews, but my actual views were not widely known until after I became my nation's leader. However, anyone could have easily learned what I really believed if they had simply read my writings and examined those people I associated with. But they did not. Then I became the most powerful man in the world, and the world learned the truth. Who am I? Now, I'm not going to answer that right now. I'm going to save that for the second half of this hour-long show. And see if I can get some folks to call in, maybe take a stab at this one. Again, the question is, who am I? And I just basically described pretty much everything you need to know to make a guess at that. And I'm going to go on to some other topics here that are also every bit as important. Now, we have really probably the largest library of archives of anyone on internet radio. We've got multiple streams here at PBS Radio, and you're encouraged to sign up for the archives if you haven't. We've got 1 month left here in 2008, and the network has been providing all of the programs, and they will continue to do that on the network under one low fee. We're not talking about just downloading Evident Footprints, but there are many, many hosts, many great shows, and I know that a lot of people listen at night, and more even download and listen during the daytime. They'll download the MP3 files and put them in their iPod or listen on their computer when they get home from work and they have a little bit of free time. And so I suggest you have a look there. Click on the archives and check it out. The subscription is for 1 year, and you're free to download all of the shows on bbsradio.com. Now, last week, we were talking about, on Monday, in fact, we were talking about something pretty important in terms of interpreting the Bible and sort of working our way through all the hidden history that's been kept from the people. And I've been doing a lot of reading on the side in an attempt to stay up on the things that people have written, to stay up on the aspect of what I do, which is basically the best job possible that I could do to bring you the truth. And the truth comes in many colors, many shapes, many sizes. Sometimes it comes in sound, sometimes it comes in light, sometimes it's just an aha. And we have so many accounts of history that it's really difficult to sort through all of it. Now, that doesn't mean it's impossible to sort through it. It's just that in the process of sorting through our true history, we've got to also take into account that many things that we're told are not true. Or there are aspects of what we're taught that have some truth, but we have omissions. Now, when you're not getting the whole story, especially about an event that took place, roughly 2,000 years ago, we rely on the things that we have been shown, the texts that have been written, the translations, which in and of themselves create problems if they're mistranslated or if the real meaning of what has been said has been disguised in some manner. And so we find that when we study religious books or sacred books, and if we study them in a particular language, the person who's going to best be able to translate those books for us are, one, the person that speaks the primary language in which that book was written, and two, to either be able to translate as lucidly in the second language, or to have someone there that can assist in translating. So some of the folks that in the past that were the scribes for kings or queens and put to pen these teachings, the scribes worked for them, and they worked maybe their whole lives or maybe a good portion of their life to provide some written, representation of what those particular documents meant. And when it comes to editing, when it comes to taking what someone has maybe delivered in a very spiritual way, and then put their own interpretation into it, then you start getting away from what was actually said, and you start to have misrepresentations of the truth. Now, that's assuming that what the person was saying was actually true to begin with. In the case of the individual we know as Jesus Christ, or as I discussed last Monday, Esau Emmanuel, as he called himself in the piece that I read from the Phoenix Journal, we have to trust that if this information is true, if it rings true, and it makes more sense, it's quite possibly the actual truth being delivered to us in another means. And that doesn't mean that it's not the truth. We have these mindsets based upon belief, which has been basically rammed down our throats our whole lives, that things are a certain way and that we're not to question them. In fact, that's been a problem for anybody even today who questions 9/11 or questions the validity of a political election or questions the motives of us being in a particular country involved in a war with someone that didn't commit this first crime that was actually likely committed by our own government with the help of some others. And we seem to be able to compartmentalize each event as if one has no bearing on the other. Yet these people that are perpetrating these acts are tying all these things together. And somehow the majority doesn't seem to be able to connect the dots. Now, this has been going on for thousands of years. This is not a new phenomenon. And we haven't been here for thousands of years in this lifetime. And so we are, in our forgetfulness, as we experience life, we are brainwashed, we are propagandized, we are herded like sheep or cattle into this belief system. And in my conversations with folks that understand this, they get the picture, they keep asking this question of, you know, how do I get out of this mindset, or what can I do? We talked about this for the past few weeks now on the show, with many guests as well. They were all willing to tackle this subject because our intention is not to create fear, but to bring understanding. And these things have to be repeated more than once. They have to be studied and examined and dissected so that you can see how this has been created. It's difficult for people because they've been taught in a religious context that they must believe. They must believe in their Savior. They must believe in God. They must believe what the leader of the church is telling them. They must believe what government is telling them. They must believe what they learn in school. They must believe what they hear on TV and read in the newspapers and the magazines. Believe, believe, believe. And yet no one defines the word believe. We had recently, during this past election, the word change. And change was never defined. In fact, we were told to believe in change. So you have this muddied up word, change, which everything is doing all the time anyway. Even the corruption is changing. It's getting more corrupt. And I don't need to believe in that. None of us are really required to believe in that. We can see it with our own eyes and hear it with our own ears. It's an experience. So it doesn't require belief. We know it. We're in the knowing of it because it's still going on. So when we consider belief and its source, the meaning of the word and what it's designed to cause within us, or what it's designed to do to us to keep us from touching making that inner connection between us and our Creator, we become paralyzed. Belief is an assumption that a certain thing, certain principle, or a certain thought, or a certain idea, or even an event is so, because we have been told that. So when we are believing, we are accepting something that another has said. I've never asked my audience to believe what I'm saying. Never. What I do ask is that you do some research, that you can move out of belief into knowing, because knowing is in real time. It's now. It's not in the past. And belief, which is based upon an illusion, doesn't even have a foundation. Its only foundation is the illusion. And an illusion, maybe we should define that word, illusion. What does it It's something that appears to be that is not. That's one definition of it. Something that appears to be real. That would be maybe another definition of it. My dictionary says it's a false idea or belief. A false idea. Now, if I can interchange a false idea with a belief, then a belief is a false idea. Here's another definition, the deceptive appearance or impression. A thing that is or is likely to be wrongly perceived or interpreted by the senses. And we use phrases like be under the illusion that, which would mean believe mistakenly that something is so, or be under no illusion, be fully aware of the true state of affairs. Well, that is the opposite. So that would be the opposite of believe, which would be knowing. It's interesting that if we begin looking at these words closely, the definition holds. The definition has some validity. Now, going back to what we were talking about, so when we get into religion, we get into organized religion. Organized religion, what is that? That's a religion that has rules and regulations, and we think of an organization as something that has been decided to be a, let's say, a participatory or a governing body. All right? Under organize, the word organize is to arrange into a structured whole, order, coordinate the activities of a person or group of people efficiently. See, there's the organization, the coordination, or form into a labor union, political group, etc. The archaic meaning would be to arrange or form into a living being or tissue. So a religious organization then would be forming the group along a particular structured whole. And because of that, we have all these different possibilities. When you're following something that's unclear, when you don't have a model that is a singular model, you have now opened the door for different beliefs. Because knowing it would be one way, and it would be no other way. Knowing would be based upon the truth, and anything outside of the truth would not be known. Therefore, it would have to be believed. And there we are in the past tense. Known and believed are past tenses, and as we talked about several weeks ago, that is the first identification with the ego, or with the illusory self, the false self. And so belief is something that belongs with the false self. So if you're thinking in somewhere in your being that your ego is you, or that the false self is you, or that you are your beliefs, then you're all about illusion. We've defined that now. We've defined it pretty clearly. We could spend hours talking about just that topic. That's not the intention here. That can get boring. I have the feeling that my listening audience understands that. This makes a lot of sense to them. So I'll assume I won't say believe, I will assume, on the basis of how much we've talked about that particular aspect, that you understand that. If you want illusion and you have to escape your life, the everyday drudgery of getting up, going to work, coming back, and going through that routine of getting ready to do the same thing again tomorrow, usually without much rest, without much sleep, then you're welcome, first of all, to stay locked in that. If you're interested in sort of seeing really what's going on around you, then you've got to start using discernment, and you've got to consider that many of the things that you take for granted are nothing but illusions that you have accepted. And you have formed other illusions on top of those to substantiate why you're just allowing for that, why you're accepting that. When you do that, you give up your power. You give up your sovereignty. And ultimately, you give up your freedom. And you do it unconsciously, or you do it subconsciously. Some part of you knows that you're doing it, and so you're unhappy with it. Or you become weakened by it, by not doing anything. Or you take on some sort of addiction to escape from it. Or you do nothing. You just ignore it completely. There are a lot of people actually doing that because they don't like facing the emotions that come out when you realize the truth. Many people, when they're realizing the truth, still will say, well, you know, that's not for me. I'm too busy. I don't have time for that. Let someone else do it. Well, then we have a savior. We have a messiah that we're waiting for to come and do that. Or we're waiting for someone from outer space to come here and do that. And they're all watching us, both the Messiah and those from outer space watching us, saying, my goodness, what a weak species. What a limited species. Because we have allowed ourselves to be limited, and we have really forsaken any opportunity for growth, because solving the problem is all we have to do. May be a big problem, but it's got to be solved. Somebody's got to solve it. It's one reason why we talk about these things on this show. I wonder, during Thanksgiving or the days that followed, how many people actually contemplated even the meaning of Thanksgiving. I mean, is it really about just getting together and having turkey and sweet potatoes and pumpkin pie? Is that all Thanksgiving is about? Or is it about football games and movies? We don't really pay attention to what's happening to our country, what's left of it. We don't really pay attention to the plight of others around the world either. And we are, to some extent, in the world. Even though we may not be of the world, we are in the world. And while we're here, we are responsible for each other. This thing about the government will save us, or the church will save us, or someone's going to come out from outer space, or from the ether to save us. What are we here for? Are we here just to be saved by someone else? Can we not do anything on our own? Can we not make our own decisions? Now, I'd like to take some time here and go back into the reading that I was doing. I had left off with John the Baptist, and I was reading about the life of Jesus Emmanuel, otherwise known as Jesus, Jesus the Christ. This comes from the Phoenix Journal, written in 1989. And because it's almost 2,000 years after the Bible, doesn't mean that this is untrue. 40 days with higher beings. After Emmanuel was baptized, he soon emerged from the water of the River Jordan, and as he climbed forth upon the river shoal, a great excitement passed through the crowd gathered there. For witnessed thusly, a metallic light fell from the sky and dropped over the River Jordan. The people all fell on their faces and pressed them into the sand of the river shore, and some jumped into the river itself, for they were terrified and frozen in fear. But a voice spoke out of the metallic light, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. He will be the King of truth and teacher of wisdom, and who shall lift this human race to knowledge." After the voice was silent, Emmanuel turned to the crowd and told them to be at peace and fear not. He placed his blessings upon those gathered, and the panic and fear was abated. He then turned and entered into the metallic light, which appeared to be surrounded by fire and smoke, but gave forth no terrible heat, which burned the skin. However, all kept a distance from the light, save Emmanuel, who had walked forth and entered therein. After he entered into the light through an opening, the opening was sealed closed, and the light ascended into the sky, glided across the lifeless sea of air, and the singing of the metallic light soon became silent. After that, Emmanuel was no longer seen nor heard upon the land for 40 days and nights. During the ensuing period of time, Emmanuel no longer lived among the people of the human race of the earth. Actually, he never again lived in the fullness of human density from that very day forward, for he was somehow made different from the human creation with whom he was to experience. The next portion was laid forth in words from the Master himself, and in fact, ye of the small group circle have shared his telling of the secret. I shall retell of it here, that this document be in completion as a unit record of sequence. However, I shall cover it only briefly, for the Master Emmanuel wishes to cover this experience in more detail at a later time sequence. I shall relate it exactly as the scrolls can be translated. After Emmanuel was lifted up from the earth, and when this happened, no one knew where he had been taken. Emmanuel was led off by the metallic lighted object between north and west, where the guardian angels had received cords with which to measure the place for the chosen ones. Thus, he lived for 40 days and 39 nights between the winds of the north and the west, where he received the secret of wisdom. Meanwhile, he spent his days with the wise saints and God, and the guardian angels, the celestial sons, who taught him the knowledge of the wisdom, the dominion of God over this human race, and his celestial sons, the omnipotence of the creation of the universes, and the immortality of the spirit through rebirth. There he saw the forefathers, the saints of ancient times, who were the fathers of the human race, the celestial sons. From there, he went north along the ends of the earth, where the metallic lights and fire vehicles fell out of the sky, or streaked through the skies, or, with singing, covered with smoke and fire, soared into the spaces, and then sometimes sat silently above the land in silent, motionless cloud forms, when near unto the land masses. Now, I'll pause for a moment and say that sounds very much like a spaceship, if I didn't know better. Or some kind of flying vehicle. Three portals. There at the ends of the entire earth, he saw a great and marvelous wonder. Here he saw the doors of heaven open. there were three of these doors which were opened unto him that he might see within, as big as the area of the lifeless sea near the river Jordan did the heavenly doors radiate in its brightness Zohar. Radiating therein, the entire land of Israel was alive and true, man and animal and everything that was there. Inside this first heavenly door there was no hidden secret, for Zohar entered the smallest spaces of the cottages and revealed the last to be known. Inside the second heavenly gateway there rose mighty mountains whose tops reached into the sky and disappeared into the clouds. Huge masses of deep snow were lying down at the foot of the mountains, and at the edge thereof another human race with brown skin built their dwellings. The third heavenly portal revealed a land of huge dimensions, mountainous land with rivers, lakes, and oceans. Again, therein lived another human race. Not far from these three heavenly portals was the palace of God, ruler of the pieces, and those who had traveled from afar, the celestial sons and the guardian angels. In his palace, God ruled over the three human races created by him and over his following, the celestial sons. He was immortal and ancient and the size of a great giant, like unto the celestial sons. Sacred teachers. Within this palace of God, there appeared to Emmanuel two very tall men, the likes of whom he had never seen before on earth. Their faces radiated like the sun, their eyes seemed like burning torches, and fire seemed to come from their mouths. Their clothing resembled a layer of foam, and their arms were like unto golden wings. They lived in their own world, for the world of humankind had killed them. These two men from the constellations of the seven sisters were sacred teachers, and were together with two smaller men who said they were men from Baal. They said, "People have come from heaven to earth, and other people have been lifted from earth into heaven. The people that had come from heaven remained on earth for a long time and created the intelligent human race. Behold, men created by the celestial sons were very different in their own way from the other people of the earth. They were not like man of earth, but similar to the children of the angels of heaven, a different kind. Their body was white and pale, as likened to snow, and red in the within as the rosebud. Their hair was white as wool, and their eyes most beautiful. The human races shall keep their inherited beauty and keep on creating it. But in the course of centuries and millennia, they shall mix with other human races of the earth and heavens in order to create with the earth people new human races and special races, such as the celestial suns." The wisdom of a celestial sun. "Emmanuel, you are of wisdom created from amongst us of celestial suns. With your wisdom, you will make the impossible possible and perform acts considered to be miracles by the human races. You know the power of spirit, but beware, do not abuse it. Your wisdom, which you receive through us, will serve the well-being of the human races, but the way leading thereto will be very difficult for them and for you. You will not be recognized for that which you are, and you will be renounced, for the human races are ignorant and filled with superstition and false teachers. The human races believe that God is the creation itself and not the ruler of the celestial suns and these human races. The people of the earth attribute to him the omnipotence of the creation and glorify his as the creation itself. However, God is like unto a man, like all the celestial suns and the human races, except he is spiritually infinitely more developed than they, more than any human creation or celestial sun." Now, for your information, I am repeating this tail end here because this leads into more of what we're going to be discussing here. And it's important to repeat this because it's supporting what I said. And although I wasn't following this script, it does follow the same pattern. Heed not false teachings. You too, Emmanuel, they will insult as God and his inborn son, and you too will be made equal in their ignorance to the creation. You will be in the telling of them that they too can be as you, but they will not be in understanding and persecute you for your generosity of truth. Do not heed these false teachings, because millennia will pass before the people of the human races from the earth will be able to recognize the truth. This will be for several reasons, one of which is that you must grow through thy initiations unto thy godly status, whereby ye shall be given the name and full inheritance. Great floods of human blood shall be shed on your account, your blood as well as that of uncounted generations of human ones. Nonetheless, fulfill your mission as the King of Wisdom, as the Son of Gabriel, the Celestial Son, for it is ordained from thy God, the One of total light and wisdom, the Infinite One. In the name of God, the law was issued to create you, so that you may serve as a prophet and forerunner of wisdom to this human race, and unto all new human races to come forth upon the earth lands. Fulfill your mission without annoyance, and do not allow for antagonization, for it will be great testing that you will endure. You will be unperturbed by opposition to all lack of reason and false teachings of the scribes and Pharisees, as well as against the incredulous people. Ye must always perform in balance and remain in inner wisdom and harmony, for yours will be an example for the evolutions to come up upon the human races. Ye shall be given to grow beyond the wisdom of all human races and become one with God, that ye will fulfill thy ultimate mission within the realm of humans. Upon your fulfillment of your mission, centuries and two millennia shall have passed before the truth of your wisdom is brought forth amongst the people and shall be recognized and spread by some ones of the people of the human race. These appointed and concentrated ones shall have also been trained and taught by the celestial sons in the realms of God. They shall be daring and dedicated above all others that their missions also be fulfilled in perfection and the proper sequence of time portions. Not before the time when machines project themselves into the sky of the human will truth break through and false teachings will slowly become most unstable and shaky. Namely, that you are the Son of God of the creation, for you will be recognized as the Son of Celestial Sons and will become one with God and within the creation. Celestial sons to reveal themselves. This will be the time that we, the celestial sons, will begin to reveal ourselves anew to the human races, because they will have become knowing and will threaten the order of heaven with the power they will have gained. But they will be arrogant and ignorant and unable to contain the foolish power they will have discovered and will threaten annihilation and decimation of the entire earth through their evil tinkering. Thusly they spoke, the celestial sons, between north and west, before they brought Emmanuel in the metallic light orb back into Israel in the land of Galilee. When Emmanuel returned, he found that John the Baptist had been imprisoned, and thereafter he left the town of Nazareth and went forth to live in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the lands of Zebulun and Naphtali. At that time, Emmanuel went forth and began to teach and warn the people, repent and turn to the truth and to knowledge, for they alone bring life unto you. Interesting. Now, we have been talking about repentance, we have been talking about the truth, recognizing the truth, becoming aware of the truth, and seeing the truth, acknowledging it, and to knowledge as well. Not belief. He doesn't say believe. He says turn to knowledge. First disciples. And then, as Emmanuel went along the Sea of Galilee with his teaching, he came upon two brothers named Peter and Andrew of the house of Simon, known also as Simeon, and they threw their fishing nets into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Emmanuel spoke to them, saying, "Come and follow me. I shall teach you knowledge and make you into fishers of men." After they listened to Emmanuel's truth, they became bonded friends, and they soon left their fishing nets behind and traveled along with the young Emmanuel, all being young and about the same number of years. They and Emmanuel traveled over the whole of Galilee, taught in the synagogues, preached the knowledge of the Spirit, and healed all diseases and infirmities of the people who came forth to hear and sought wisdom. The news of him spread all over Syria. They who had heard of him brought to him those who were sick, afflicted with various diseases and plagues, those who were obsessed, the lunatics, and those who were sick of palsy and all manner of distresses. He healed them all. It came to pass that many people followed him from Galilee, from the 10 cities, from Jerusalem, from Judea, and from the other side of the river Jordan. Everywhere they went, many people would gather and aspire to hear his teachings, for it was recognized that he was of higher inspiration and knowledge. The crowds continually grew in numbers, so that the young master would need find a higher ground upon which to stand, that he might be seen and heard. He sought out placement whereby he might stand atop a hillock and oversee the people, that his voice might be carried to the far edges of the gathered ones. Again, I'm repeating something I read a week ago, Monday. Now, I'm going to go into, in our remaining moments, I'm going to try to cover the part on Iscariot and Emmanuel. Let us continue, Dharma. Sananda here in light, that you receive in clarity and comfort. Now, this is the newly assigned name. Let us return to Judas Iscariot, that you can continue on your scribing from the ancient scrolls. These scrolls are in safekeeping to be again brought unto you ones in security at the proper sequence. I do not like to refuse response unto your questions, so let us please request that you accept our sequence of events and writings, and not overponder or outthink thy higher brethren. There is safety in thy ignorance, and too much speculation brings danger, the same as if it were true rather than conceptual. If this is not honored, we will refrain from sharing any of the documents of translation, even among the small group. You ones get most ebullient, and the radiance emanates from you like a lighthouse. Caution shall be thy password. Please do not cause us the necessity of delay in that which might already be planned. Ye are monitored most carefully, beloved ones. As these writings are put to publication, I request that the conversations with Dharma, as well as any instructions, be also published in sequence as brought forth. Ones of you who do set up can label or entitle the separate portions in suitable fashion. These conversations, however, must be included, for there is great purpose therein. So be it. I relinquish to Judas. The Sermon on the Mount. When Emmanuel saw the multitudes of people who followed him on one particularly crowded day, he went on top of a small mountain and sat down, and his disciples went forth with him. Time had passed, and he had gained many disciples, and Emmanuel had grown in maturity of both physical and mental stature. There was much questioning about how one goes forth in the physical, and how one should practice life that they might be blessed in the sight of God and the celestial suns, and be in balance and harmony with the creation. He spoke thusly unto them. Blessed are they who are rich in spirit and recognize the truth, for life belongs to them. Blessed are they who lament, for they shall see the truth therein and shall be comforted. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for truth and knowledge, for they shall be satisfied and given wisdom. Blessed are they who obey the law of nature and the creation, for they live accordingly. They live according to the plan of the creation. Blessed are they who have a clear conscience and who listen unto their conscience in truth, for they need not fear. Blessed are they who believe in the creation, for they do not follow false teachings. Blessed are the righteous, for nature is subject unto them. Blessed art thou when men shall revile you because of your teachings, and because of me persecute you, and falsely speak evil against you. Rejoice and be comforted, for life and the new life will reward you. Thusly did they persecute the prophets who were here before you. You are the salt of the earth. When the salt loses its savor, with what will you salt? It is of no further use except to be thrown out and stepped on by the people. You are the light of the world. The city that is on top of a mountain cannot remain hidden. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but rather place it on a candlestick and give light to all the people in the house. Let your light so shine before the people, so that they will see your good works and recognize the truth of your knowledge. Do not think that I have come to dissolve the law or the prophets. I have not come to dissolve, but to fulfill and to reveal knowledge. Thusly I tell you the truth. Until heaven and earth vanish, not the smallest letter nor one iota of the law of creation and the laws of nature will disappear until all has been fulfilled. Justice, the laws of nature and of truth. He who violates the smallest law or violates the smallest commandment and teaches people falsely will be called the least, but he who spreads the teachings in truth will be called the greatest, and the Spirit will thank him. For I say unto you, if your righteousness is not better than that of the Pharisees and scribes, you will not receive the gratitude of the Spirit and of life. You have heard that it has been said to the old, you shall not kill, but he who kills shall be judged by the court. I tell you, be just according to the natural law of the creation, so that you will find the judgment in logic and reason with wisdom. Guilty are all who do not act in self-defense, or acting to a given verdict when they kill or speak and practice evil. Justice according to the natural law of the creation by itself elevates a verdict into logic. Do not accommodate or oblige your adversaries when you are right, and the judge will probably decide in your favor if thy judge be of honor and without parochialism and bigotry. Verily, I say unto you, you will obtain justice only when you find truth yourself and can make your fellow man understand of it. Well, I have been trying to do that in my writing. And certainly we all know of great injustices being carried out by the courts. Not in every case, but a good many. And it's usually against those who are speaking out against the corruption or against the murder. But here we actually have even a statement for defending oneself, which is quite a bit different from what you're taught. Now, that's trusting that this message is from Esau Emmanuel, known in modern times as Jesus. And they're very forceful words, and they're very direct words, very focused in their meaning. Not much room for interpretation of any sort. Now, as we go upon our days, and we will continue this on tomorrow night's show, we'll be continuing this probably for most of the week. I encourage everyone to consider these words. If you think you might want to listen to this again, and this is a difficult topic because there's a lot of mixed feelings, a lot of mixed thoughts, and a lot of different consciousness surfacing right now amongst many of the people that I've talked to and have written to me, and people are very confused about what's going on. And of course, it's designed to be that way. Ultimately, when you stick to these truths, you're going to see that the problems you're having keep coming back to you. Keep coming back to your responsibility to discern, to know, and to continue knowing and discerning. It will lead you to a state of being where you are not following illusions, you're not seeing a mirage at every turn, and you're actually seeing the truth and able to discern when you're being lied to. Of course, we know the media does that. I find it ever increasingly more difficult to watch the news. I'm not even interested in what brainwashing method they might be using at this point. It's astounding what they're doing, and more astounding as to what they're not doing. And that's basically telling us the truth. Lots of people are entering this stage of fear. We move from one sort of fear to another. It's the fear of having to face a constitutional crisis, or the fear of a failing stock market, or the implosion of a central bank that's done nothing but profit off of the blood, sweat, and tears of souls in this country for well over 100 years. 200 years would probably be a better estimate. And it was designed that way. And the disease, the amount of disease and illness is increasing. We are out of sync with the rest of the universe in this environment on Earth, and we've got to change it. We can change it by looking at ourselves and by being who we really are. And if you're not sure, make a choice. Because that's part of your freedom. That's part of your God-given sovereignty, which is another word for freedom. I want to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, most of all my listening audience tuning in, and I'll see you again tomorrow night, same time, same place. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and have a good night.